Behavioral addictions are stigmatized because they feel like more of a choice because there's no substance changing your brain. However, process addictions or behavioral addictions like porn do actually change the brain in similar ways. In this episode, I'll explain why porn is so addicting, brain changes that happen from porn, and how porn influences us to objectify women and see them as sex objects. Porn has another layer of addictiveness beyond brain changes. It causes novelty seeking. This destroys relationships, and I will explain more about why porn promotes novelty seeking, being unable to enjoy regular sex, and warning signs to look out for that you or a loved one are addicted to porn. And before we dig in, I'd like to thank my sponsors who made this episode possible. You've heard the benefits of sobriety: amazing sleep and less anxiety. But what happens if you quit drinking and now you can't sleep and you're super anxious? Enter Tenacity, my sleep saviors, and they have science to back up their sleep, anxiety, and pain-relieving powers. Back in 2016, they invested a $2.5 million grant to Middle Tennessee State University to study the hemp plant. Turns out their special patent-pending CBD-CBDA formula is twice as effective as CBD alone and can be more effective than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. So if you're tired of tossing and turning like a rotisserie chicken, then Tenacity's got your back with their range of great products from tinctures to gummies to lotions. Tenacity is my go-to when I can't sleep or I have way too much anxiety. I'm so glad that I discovered them. So go to Tenacity.com and use the code POWER to get 25% off your order. That's Tenacity.com, T-A-N-A-S-I, to get 25% off your first order with the promo code POWER. Sober Powered is sponsored by BetterHelp. I was a stress drinker, and I thought, if only I didn't have so much stress, I wouldn't have to drink this much. But do you know why I had all this stress? Because I didn't have the skills to take stressors off my plate, so they built up and wore me down. Some stressors are big and others are small, but carrying around 25 minor annoyances is going to have an impact on you. Plus, did you know that alcohol messes with our stress response system and decreases our ability to handle stress? It makes small things seem like a much bigger deal. Learning how to manage stress and take things off my plate has changed my life. I'm calm, I'm less reactive, and I believe that I can handle whatever comes my way. I feel proud of the way that I handle things now. You can get there too. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/sober to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp. HELP.com/sober. Are you tired of your digestive system feeling like a circus act gone wrong? Introducing Ritual's 3-in-1 gut superhero, Symbiotic Plus. A probiotic, prebiotic, and postbiotic all rolled into one. And with 25% off with the code POWER, there's no better time to check out Ritual. Let's break it down. Probiotics are like the cool kids at the gut party, keeping everything in check and making sure the good vibes are flowing. Prebiotics are their wingmen, fueling the party with all the right snacks to keep the good bacteria thriving. And postbiotics, well, they're like the cleanup crew, sweeping away the mess and leaving your gut feeling fresh and fabulous. So say goodbye to the gut drama, and remember, there's no more shame in your gut game. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/power. Welcome back to the Sober Powered Podcast. I'm your host, Jill, and I want to start this episode with so many disclaimers. I have watched porn, but I have never struggled with porn addiction. So I'm approaching this episode with more curiosity than personal experience. Some of you have brought this topic up to me more and more lately, so I wanted to learn more about it. I will recommend some resources in the show notes that you can check out too. And I know that porn is a very triggering topic for those who have personal experience. So if you are triggered by this topic, then you may want to come back to this episode at another time. Last disclaimer, if you listen to my show, then you know I'm very direct and I'm just going to say all the words that are associated with this topic. So if all of those sexual type of words make you feel uncomfortable, then please skip this one. So the first thing that stood out to me about porn addiction is what researchers call the triple A influence, meaning accessibility, affordability, and anonymity. You can watch porn for free by yourself in your house. Alcohol and drugs are expensive, and gambling is very expensive. Behavioral addictions result in a very similar problematic cycle. Impaired control, which involves cravings and unsuccessful attempts to reduce or stop the behavior. Giving up activities that you used to enjoy and neglecting other areas of your life. And risky use, which involves persisting with the behavior even though you know it's harmful for you. Eventually, porn dominates your life and you hate it, but you can't stop doing it. In my opinion, the number one sign that someone is struggling with anything is attempting to cut back or stop and being unable to. So I'll get to more signs of porn addiction later. Compulsive sexual behavior is thought to affect about 3 to 6% of the population, and it involves excessive masturbation, cyber sex, porn, phone sex, strip club visits, and lots of sex with consenting adults. The ease of access with the internet has caused a rise in behavioral addiction because you can easily shop, gamble, bet on sports, engage in cyber sex, and watch porn whenever you want. In episode 204, I discussed things that make us vulnerable to developing an addiction, an opportunity, and what is normalized in your circles were big ones. Another factor too is privacy. We love to isolate when we're addicted to something, and behavioral addictions provide a lot of privacy. Behavioral addictions are difficult in a similar way as alcohol is because it's in our face all the time. Sexuality, porn, gambling, sports betting, and alcohol are all thrown in our face. Sometimes on Instagram, I even have fake sex pages liking my stories to try to get my attention so that I go to their page into whatever funnel it is. And one tactic of OnlyFans pages is to be present on dating apps to funnel people to their OnlyFans account. So you don't have to be directly searching for this stuff. And I can imagine that that's very triggering for people that are trying to be sober from porn. Porn use for young men can impact sexual development, especially if they start watching porn before they have had sex for the first time. Abnormally low sexual desire when regularly watching porn and erectile dysfunction have spiked dramatically in young men recently compared to a couple decades ago. A 2017 study surveyed 20,000 people and found that 1.2% of women considered themselves to be addicted to porn and 4.4% of men did. Studies have found similar results for sex addiction as well. And according to a few studies, predictors of problematic sexual behavior or porn use involve being a man, being young, being religious, frequent internet use, negative emotions, being prone to sexual boredom, and novelty seeking. Based on what I've learned about porn for this episode, novelty seeking seems to be the most destructive part of this, and I'll speak on that more later in this episode. The consequences of porn addiction for both men and women include sexual dissatisfaction and dysfunction, being more critical of your own body and your partner's body, increased performance anxiety, less actual sex, engaging in paid sex, higher levels of anxiety and depression, substance use, problematic alcohol use, drinking too much coffee, and problematic video game use. Although porn is not a substance, it impacts the brain's reward system in similar ways as alcohol and drugs do. Like I explained in episode 170, alcohol releases way more dopamine than any natural reward does, and porn is the same. You can get a huge dopamine hit very quickly, and if this is repeated over and over, the reward system adapts. Now your brain gets desensitized to regular stuff and only big hits of dopamine register for you. This makes life feel very dull and worthless when we stop the behavior or the substance. Plus, there's only so much alcohol that we can drink before we throw up, pass out, or have to go to the hospital for alcohol poisoning. Watching porn doesn't have the same limits, so you can keep maintaining that high for a very long time. You may be thinking, well, there's only so many times that you can have an orgasm from porn. And sure, that's true, but people can edge, where they masturbate without climaxing for many hours, so they can extend that initial good part for a really long time. It's important to remember that dopamine isn't about pleasure, even though it gets labeled as a pleasure molecule. Dopamine is about motivation, seeking behavior, and anticipation of a reward. It keeps us hooked because it keeps signaling us that this behavior is associated with the most critical reward of our lives. And because dopamine is involved in the anticipation of a reward, why would you stop doing the behavior if you know a reward is coming soon? You can think of it like scrolling Reels or TikTok, and you've wasted 20 or 30 minutes scrolling bad ones, but you keep thinking, just a couple more, and then I'll get a really good one. And that anticipation keeps you scrolling 20 or 30 minutes more of bad reels. Studies have found that there are clear differences in brain activities between people who have compulsive sexual behaviors versus controls, and their brains are similar to people that are addicted to drugs and alcohol. Just like I said in episode 203 about dopamine, healthy controls like sexual images, people with sex and porn addiction experience wanting when they're shown sexual images. Healthy controls have a general sexual desire. People with addiction have a desire for that very specific cue. And they also have a diminished desire for sex with a partner, but not for masturbation to porn. And as always, I'll put the recommended episodes in the show notes for you. Low dopamine in the brain makes us feel terrible and itchy, so we seek external things to fix the problem quickly. I discussed this episode with the men's only group in my community to get some more opinions so that I didn't have too many blind spots with this episode. So shout out to the men's only. One of my members shared something really wise. He said, hypothetically, when you eat a good meal, you get 10 hits of dopamine. And then your brain will compensate with a negative 10 and you don't really notice. If you drink alcohol, you get 500 hits of dopamine. So then the brain compensates with a negative 500. When you wake up hungover and miserable, you could have a breakfast beer to get 100 hits of dopamine back. But most of us are resistant to drinking before work because we know that's a whole nother level of problem drinking. Or you could watch some quick porn and get 500 hits of dopamine, then go about your day with that temporary brain chemistry boost. Sure, you'll have a come down, but then you can just drink after work to get a boost again. Behavioral addictions and alcohol go together really well because of this example, but also because the change in mental state from alcohol or from other drugs makes it easier to excuse the behaviors. Happy people with good coping skills don't usually watch porn marathons, so it's not a stretch to think that they would also use alcohol or drugs to cope. And by the way, this is a hypothetical example. Normally with natural rewards, there's a slow come down, not a compensation. But that's not really the point here. We know that dopamine is for survival and it promotes seeking behaviors to help us stay alive and continue the species. Alcohol is not essential for our survival, but it tricks the brain that it is because of the amount of dopamine it releases. Sex is essential for our survival, though, so sex and porn addiction take advantage of something that is truly essential for our survival and then make it weird. That's not a scientific term, but I think it's an important distinction between substance addictions and porn. People with porn addiction also show an attentional bias towards sexual cues. So remember attentional bias? It's one of my favorite things, and I'll reference the episodes where I explain it in the show notes. Attentional bias is the tendency for our attention and focus to get stuck on addictive cues and not be able to redirect our attention. It's like when you go somewhere and you can immediately find all the alcohol in the room, or how you know exactly how many drinks everyone has had and how fast or slow they're drinking. If you can't get your attention off a cue, then it's easier for that cue to make you relapse because cues release dopamine that lead to seeking behavior, aka cravings. So if your attention is continuously focused on the cue, more and more and more dopamine is being released in anticipation of the reward. People with sex and porn addiction also experience attentional bias. When you're addicted to alcohol, you just drink a bunch of alcohol and that's it. It's just alcohol. But when you're addicted to porn, your brain gets desensitized to these sexual cues after repeated exposure, meaning your reward system develops a tolerance and you release less dopamine. Now you have to start chasing novelty to get the hits of dopamine that you need to not feel dull and worthless. With porn, there's so much novelty and excitement, and this leads to choosing this behavior over real sex with a partner. When you're with someone for a while, there's no more novelty. Married couples can get stuck in the same boring husband and wife sex routine, which can cause a lack of interest in sex for someone who is addicted to novelty. Plus, porn can even involve things that aren't real or sexual fantasies that are not safe, just reinforcing the need for novelty. And this can keep people searching on the internet for new and more exciting and often weirder things for hours and hours. It's really important to know, too, the women in porn are paid actresses, and they're pretending to like it a lot to keep you hooked. It's hard for us to have empathy for people with behavioral addictions when we don't understand. We know that alcohol and drugs change the brain and our mental state, so we can kind of make sense of it. But behavioral addictions feel like they're more of a choice and a moral failing. People who struggle with sex and porn have changes in the brain just like drinkers and drug users do. They have a decrease in connectivity between the prefrontal cortex with the amygdala and the ventral striatum. And the amygdala is involved in anxiety, anger, fear, and being reactive. The ventral striatum is involved in the anticipation of rewards. This is something that I explain in my anger management class too. The prefrontal cortex is designed to put the brakes on automatic self-destructive behaviors. But when the prefrontal cortex isn't connected well to the rest of the brain, it can't send that message anymore. And the automatic reward part of the brain just does what it wants despite our good intentions and morals. People with sex and porn addiction also have a dysfunctional stress response, like I explained in episode 201 with alcohol, where they also develop a blunted cortisol response. Cortisol is good for us as long as it isn't too much. People with a blunted stress response have higher amounts of cortisol sitting in their brains, but they don't react to it, and they can have more depression. They're also more likely to be impulsive and seek out risky things, and they care less about things that they should care about. The example that I gave in episode 201 was kids with this adaptation worry less about their exams, so then they study less than their peers. Someone in active addiction could be worrying less about the impact their behaviors are having on their spouse and family, for example. Like, have you ever had the thought, this is only affecting me? Less connectivity with the prefrontal cortex leads to poorer executive functioning skills, which happens in alcohol, drug, sex, and porn addiction. These include deficits in impulse control, cognitive flexibility, redirecting attention, judgment and decision-making skills, working memory, emotion regulation, and an extreme preoccupation with whatever you're addicted to, so the obsession. So why does this happen to some people and others can just watch some porn and move on with their lives? There are genetic factors just in the way that the brain is structured and connected and the typical things that you would expect, like dysfunctional coping, impulsivity, avoidance tendencies. Checking out and watching hours and hours of porn is a great way to avoid your problems. People who become addicted to porn aren't losers who chose that over their families. Porn just does it for them. It's their thing where alcohol is my thing. But no matter what your thing is, you have to eventually take responsibility for it and the pain that it may have caused to others. And good news, these brain adaptations are reversible, just like with other addictions. It requires time, complete sobriety, and doing the work to learn how to cope and manage emotions and stress for real. More on that in a bit. One major issue with porn addiction is supernormal stimuli. These are exaggerations of normal behaviors, objects, or cues designed to attract and capture our attention. This is the key, in my opinion. These supernormal stimuli represent real-life stuff, but they're enhanced. Novelty-seeking and supernormal stimuli make porn extremely addictive. Bodies are becoming supernormal stimuli, both men and women's bodies. And this makes us all have body image issues, but it also warps the mind of the person who is addicted to porn. Because they keep seeing these specimens whose bodies are not attainable without surgery and enhancement. One benign example of this is stuffed animals with gigantic eyes because we're attracted to those eyes. So these stuffed animals become more attention-grabbing and desirable to kids than normal-eyed toys. We're attracted to anything big. So portion sizes, body parts, SUVs, and houses are all becoming supersized to draw our attention and keep us hooked. Now you can get ab etching lipo procedures to have a perfect six pack with no effort, breast implants, fake lashes, big giant lips, hair extensions, giant BBL butts, fake muscles, and whatever else you want, basically. Getting the dopamine hit from seeing all of this perfection makes it more difficult to appreciate a normal person's face and body without picking it apart. When you're frequently exposed to big, giant, awesome butts in porn, your partner's regular butt that you've seen 2,000 times is not very exciting to your brain, even if you love that person in their butt. It's not that your partner's body sucks and it's gross and unattractive. It's that your brain is so desensitized from looking at these fake bodies online that regular bodies don't register in your reward system anymore. You don't even really have to watch a bunch of porn to become desensitized in this way because there are so many Instagram pages to look at with unrealistic bodies. And this is where the sexual dysfunction comes in and porn addiction gets worse. If you only get turned on by enhanced bodies, then you will struggle to get turned on by a regular body, especially a regular body that you've had sex with hundreds of times over years and years. This can lead to performance anxiety, shame about not being able to get turned on, and an avoidance of regular sex for the person who's addicted to porn. And then this causes their partner to feel rejected and unattractive because they're not idiots. They can tell their partner isn't turned on. This doesn't always have to lead to chasing novelty in real life and cheating, but it could. Porn shows the viewer that bodies are primarily for sexual gratification, especially in more violent or aggressive videos. A 2010 study found that 45% of the films that they looked at involved ejaculation on the woman's face or in her mouth, and 47% included the male character directing the female character in sexually objectifying ways, like get down on your knees or go over here. This depicts women as sex objects and subconsciously impacts our beliefs about women. I think of it like how the media glamorizes alcohol and makes us think that it's fancy and required to drink in Europe. Then we grow up with all these beliefs about alcohol that were put in our heads by watching TV and seeing commercials. We feel this way even before we've ever gone to Europe. The same thing happens with porn. And even the ads that you see for porn make the women look like sex objects and not real women. A 2007 study found that more frequent exposure to sexual media was associated with viewing women as sex objects. A 2014 study found that frequent exposure to porn was associated with thinking the size of a woman's butt, breasts, stomach, and body in general were more important. This isn't just for men, though. A few studies have also found that viewing women as sex objects can happen for women, too, as they watch more porn. A 2022 study published in Sexuality and Culture looked at sexual objectification in Germany, Korea, Taiwan, and the US. They found that porn use was significantly associated with sexual objectifying attitudes and behaviors. And this comes from the way that women are represented in porn. So they asked them to rate the following types of beliefs from strongly disagree to strongly agree. So these are, when I see an attractive woman or man, I imagine how she or he looks naked. I fantasize about having sex with attractive strangers that I encounter. When I am talking to an attractive woman or man at work or at school, I tend to focus on her breasts, check out his groin area, and when I pass by an attractive man or woman, I tend to check out his or her butt. The more that a person used porn, the more they objectified women's bodies. And you can see this on social media too, where women use their bodies to get more views on their reels, and then it reinforces that they have to use their bodies for attention, and then that shows other creators that they have to do that too. It's a vicious cycle. Some studies have suggested that gender inequality and sexism create a culture that makes it easier to objectify women. So beliefs like traditional gender roles exist, and women typically hold less power than men in that environment, likely being in the workplace. Porn can be sneaky, just like alcohol, where you don't have to be watching daily porn marathons and skipping work to have a problem with porn. Just like gray area drinkers get stuck saying that they don't drink daily, people who watch porn can do the same thing. It's not the frequency or the amount, it's how it's impacting your life, and you know deep down whether or not it's a problem for you. So, how do you know if you or a loved one has a porn addiction? First of all, please don't use my episode to diagnose. This is a tool for info and can be shared with your loved ones. But please don't tell them Jill said that you have a porn addiction. But I do hope that this episode helps it click for some people who are struggling and pushes them into getting support, or helps it click for the loved ones so then they can talk to their partners about it. So signs of porn addiction include trying to cut down or stop viewing porn but being unable to, experiencing cravings for porn, becoming more demanding in the bedroom and more focused on your own pleasure, making new requests of your partner because you want to try out some of the things that you've seen or make your sex more exciting, and being distracted because your thoughts drift to porn. As a porn addiction intensifies, it can turn into losing interest in sex with a real person, sexual dysfunction, where you struggle to get turned on by your partner, financial struggles, anger, disgust in yourself, viewing more extreme porn, and intense shame. As I said in the beginning, people that are more likely to become addicted to porn experience sexual boredom. Sexual boredom is defined as the tendency to feel bored with routine, over-rehearsed, dull sex. Basically what I was calling boring husband and wife sex earlier. It's not uncommon for sexual satisfaction to decrease the longer that you've been together because you get stuck in the same old sex routine, bodies change and people become less confident, and if you have kids, then that makes everything more difficult. A 2021 review of 43 studies of sexual boredom found that it's associated with general boredom proneness, sexual depression or feeling down about your sex life, depression in general, more masturbation, engaging in compulsive and risky sexual behaviors, the desire for sexual novelty, and is more commonly experienced in men. Difficulty sustaining attention can play a role in experiencing sexual boredom because you have to pay attention, be patient, and resist distractions to have satisfying sex with your partner if you're trying to improve your sex life. It takes time to work on your sex life and make sure that both people are satisfied and comfortable, but it takes no time at all to turn on some porn. If you're trying to get sober from porn, then you will likely experience withdrawal too, even though you're not withdrawing from a substance. Withdrawal symptoms include brain fog, anxiety, and decreased sex drive, and this can last between 2 to 8 weeks. For more severe and long-term porn addiction, it can last up to 8 months. So it's important to get support so that you don't feel isolated and alone, and I'll put some support options in the show notes for you. It's important to understand, too, the impact that your porn use had on your relationship or on your dating experiences. Acknowledging your partner's pain can be very validating for them, so please try not to minimize what your porn use has done to your relationship. If your partner's porn use has impacted your self-esteem and body image, then please know that none of this is your fault. You could be the hottest person on the planet, and porn would still warp your partner's brain into not being turned on by you or by anyone else. It's not that you aren't good enough, hot enough, or exciting enough in the bedroom. It's all the supernormal stimuli and novelty seeking. I know that it can feel very personal though, and this is why it's important for you to get support too, maybe through a therapist or a community of your own or sharing with your sober community. If you're addicted to porn, then the same message that I have for drinkers applies to you too. You are not a weak-willed loser or a bad person, but you have to address this, take responsibility for it, and do something about it. All of these adaptations from porn destroy relationships, and they make the partners of people addicted to porn feel isolated, alone, rejected, embarrassed, and bad about their bodies. It's so easy to take porn watching personally and feel like if I was hotter or better at sex, then they would want me and not so much porn anymore. So I really encourage everyone involved in this situation, whether you're the porn watcher or the partner, to go to therapy on your own and go to couples therapy with your partner. I imagine that it can be difficult to repair intimacy after porn addiction has impacted a relationship, so getting the support of a professional is important. If there's sexual dysfunction present and you struggle to get turned on, then know that that doesn't make you less of a man. It's a normal adaptation from watching so much porn. It's something that you can work on with support and cutting porn out of your life completely. So please check out the show notes for support options and to listen to the other episodes that I recommended. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd really appreciate if you could share it. Porn addiction is such a painful and shameful experience for people that are going through it. And it's really difficult for them to reach out for support or to talk to anyone about it. So you helping me get the word out about this episode can get more people into recovery and improve their lives and their intimacy with their partners. So thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you in the next one.
Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so, so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober podcast wherever you get your podcasts.